right. It is such a pleasure for us to welcome one of the real heroes of this story to the show. Joining us all the way from Liverpool in the UK, Moss Hills still works as an entertainer. And yes, he still goes to sea despite his experience on board the Oceanos. Moss, it's great to have you part of the conversation today. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Hi, Pippa, and thanks for having me on, and hello to your listeners.
It's a great pleasure. Moss, I know you've been one of the sort of the story keepers of this story. You've got your own website, that oceanosinking.com, that invites survivors and other crew members to share their memories and their photographs. You and your wife, Tracy, had been on board as members of the entertainment staff before the bad weather hit. And in fact, I think your own daughter had been on board for some of the school holidays. Thankfully, wasn't with you the night the ship went down. Had everything gone smoothly up until that point?
Yes, I guess it had gone pretty much smoothly up until there. We had the unusual thing of the ship stopping in East London and being chartered for the wedding, which Andrew Pike alluded to. And that kind of, that was taking place in very, very bad weather as well. Initially, the ship was supposed to go at sea and have the wedding, but they came back into the port to do it because it was so rough, and that was the day before.
Yeah. Now, Moss, prior to the 3rd and the 4th, did you have full confidence in the captain and crew? Did you ever once have any reason to doubt Captain Yannis Avranis and the crew members and their ability to keep a smooth ship sailing?
No, I had no doubts at all. And I've been sailing on ships for many years, so it just felt like a normal ship to me. Yes, it was an old ship, but I never thought it was unsafe. I wouldn't have sailed with it if I thought it was.
Yeah. Now, you were in the main lounge entertaining passengers along with many other entertainment staff through the dinner, the dance that could hardly happen because people could hardly stand up when things started to go pear-shaped. Moss, even before the lights went out and things were really going bad, were you feeling concerned? I mean, you must have been used to ships navigating bad weather by virtue of your career.
Yes, and I've been through lots of really bad storms, and this was one of them, definitely one of the worst I've been in. I didn't feel unsafe, but it was very uncomfortable, and I knew that it was difficult for guests, and I'm always really feeling sorry for guests when it's really rough weather, because they're not used to being at sea. A lot of guests were seasick. It's very difficult to walk around. It was not pleasant.
Moss, one of our listeners referenced the SOS call that was received by somebody they knew. One of those many SOS calls was, in fact, made by yourself, because you realize that the ship is really getting into potential huge difficulty. You look around with your fellow entertainers for some kind of direction from captain and crew. And as we've already heard a passenger reference, that they were notable by their absence. I believe you actually went down below decks to take a look for yourself. Can you tell us what you saw?
Yes, because when I was in the lounge, the Four Seasons lounge, a lot of guests were coming into the lounge and leaving the restaurant because service had broken down there. We got no lights on, and there were little tiny emergency lights on, but no electricity, no announcements, nothing. And they were just all streaming into that lounge. And quite a few guests kept on asking us. We were trying to entertain them, myself and Tracy and Robin and Julian and various other entertainers. But people kept asking, what's happening? What's happening? So eventually I said, look, I'm going to go and try and find out. I went down below with Julian and tried to see if we could see, was the ship sinking? We couldn't see anything. We did see some crew running around, and they all looked a bit wild-eyed and not panicked, but just this is gaggle of people running around, but they were also packing cases. They had backpacks on and some with suitcases. And we realized, look, there's something really bad going on. We went back up to the lounge and kind of got together with the entertainers and said, look, nothing's happening. And at this stage, we still thought that the captain and his team were doing whatever they could to help us. And the reason there was no announcements was perhaps the system had broken down. But I know in retrospect, that wasn't the case. So we just thought, well, we need to start reacting. I couldn't just sit there and let nothing happen. The lounge was full of people. So we just started trying to organize to get people ready to go out to lifeboats. We didn't know what we were doing. It was quite dangerous to do it because we weren't trained. We had a number of the Filipino crew who would normally be assigned to that had gone to their lifeboat stations, even though there was no announcements, no alarms, nothing, not a single word. But they went there anyway. They helped us lower the boats to place. But then we started loading people onto what lifeboats we could get, and even that was difficult because we didn't know how to fix the lifeboat at the side of the ship. It was swinging out in the swells and in bashing back against the ship hard. And as people were put into the lifeboats, and Chantel said, you know, how bad that was. Honestly, those people in the lifeboats had a terrible time. And I think they felt the brunt of the danger and the fear more than us who were left on board, even, because there were no lights. There was nobody in charge of the lifeboats. We didn't know how to start the engines. We didn't know anything about it. We simply packed some people in there, let go of the lifeboat. It was simply lowered down to the ocean and just set adrift into a dark, stormy night. That is terrifying.
Sure. Mas, as Chantal said, absolutely, and a prolonged night of terror in absolute darkness, in freezing cold, terrible weather, not knowing where you were going and who was coming to help and when they would arrive. Meanwhile, you run up to the bridge, you find the bridge abandoned, you realize the captain is nowhere to be found. Mas, you pick up, I've heard some footage of one of those SMS calls that you're sitting on a microphone, SOSing another ship, and they said, well, who is this, the captain? I'm speaking to you. And you say, no, I'm the guitarist. The other ships receiving those messages must have been almost as disbelieving as you were to realize that the crew had abandoned you. But the point comes where you are now sitting on board an ever-listing deck in terrible weather. You've got the people that you can get into lifeboats, into the boats and away from the ship. But there are still more than 220 people sitting on board a ship that is now very obviously starting to sink. Did you ever at any point think we're not going to make it out of this alive?
Well, yes. I mean, not directly think, oh, I'm going to die in this. The whole time I was just focused on, right, I was really just reacting to a situation and trying to do whatever I can to help out, as was Tracy and Robin and Julian and the few others. But when just it was a very small handful, I think it was four of us on the bridge, that's when we really realized, wow, we haven't just been helping out. We're the only ones running it. And that was quite a shock. And it's at that point that we just realized, well, we have to continue. We've got to get the remaining people off. We just couldn't abandon them. And we also had to get ourselves off. It was, if you just sit there and let nothing happen, well, nothing will happen. You've got to make it happen.
Moss Hill speaking to us from Liverpool, one of the absolute heroes of this night, an entertainer on board the Oceanus who found himself leading the rescue effort. And you've mentioned, well, a lot of people have mentioned the helicopters, and we've actually had a call from one of the helicopter pilots who we'll speak to in just a moment. But Moss, how long did it take before helicopters started arriving? I mean, I know that there were many parties involved in this rescue, including the Navy and the Air Force, but those helicopters were the game changer who eventually came to start airlifting passengers off the deck. How long a wait was it before they got there?
It was several hours wait, and the reason we couldn't use the other lifeboats was, and you said earlier, the ship lifted so far to the starboard side that the port side boats, gravity wouldn't pull them down, so we couldn't use them. A couple of ships came to our rescue, and they had lifeboats, but they were freighters, so we couldn't do anything with their lifeboats because we didn't know how to operate the winches and pull the lifeboats up or do anything with them. We couldn't do it. So we just waited. I was the only person going back down below. We put a couple of the entertainers kind of guarding the stairwells, didn't let any of the passengers go anywhere else. We kept them all in the Four Seasons lounge, and I kept going down to check on things. And remember, it's dark. And eventually I'd gone down and to the deck just below the Four Seasons lounge was the restaurant where we'd all been eating dinner happily, you know, earlier, although it was a bit rough. And then suddenly I could hear the water as I was going down the stairs, and I looked into the restaurant from the stairwell goes down to it, and I could just see in the little emergency lights glistening water. There were bread rolls, flowers, serviettes, all sorts of debris, and just this huge volume of water sloshing about from side to side. I just turned around and ran back up the steps, and then we decided to take all the guests out of the Four Seasons lounge and onto the back pool deck so at least we would be in the open, because at that stage I thought the ship could go down any minute and we didn't want it to suddenly turn over and trap us all indoors. Sure. So now everyone was exposed to the weather and they could see this incredibly steep deck and the danger there. They waited there and we went back to the bridge and just waited and waited for the helicopters, and they had to come a long way. And thank goodness they did. And when we saw them coming, you know, I've got some great photos and video footage of them arriving. It was almost like a movie. There was sunrise. So I'm not sure of the time. Probably, I'm guessing, about 5 a.m. maybe. And there was a real difficulty getting the Navy divers down to the ship because the helicopters lowered as low as they could. But as they were lowering a diver down the cable, That diver was swinging from side to side, very dangerous on the two Navy divers. We had Paul Wiley and Gary Schooler were the two guys, and my word, those two are the heroes of this rescue. But we managed to get them on board. I eventually got a rope around my waist, tied it around one of the railings in the bow, and hung on that, and got them down. And then what we did was split the guests into half. They gave me a bit of kind of training on how to operate the harnesses and what signals to give to the helicopter. And then we split the guests in half. Tracy and I took about 114 guests in the bow. Paul Wiley and another passenger who was great because he was not part of anything. He was just a regular passenger, Pete Niemand. And he went to the aft deck, and Pete Niemand and Paul Wiley ran that rescue while my wife Tracy and I ran the forward rescue. And the other Navy diver, Gary Schooler, took Julian Butler, one of the entertainers, into the remaining Zodiac that was still available, launched it, so he was in the water, and he picked up people who, towards the end, started getting desperate and just jumped off the ship.
What a story, Moss. And if I'm not mistaken, you and Tracy, I think, were literally the last two people winched off the deck before the ship sank, weren't you?
Yes, although the very last one was Paul Wiley, the Navy diver who was still on the back. And in fact, the last people to be lifted completely to safety were Gary Schooler and Julian Butler, who were in that Zodiac. They got left behind for a while, and we went to try and pick them up in our helicopter. There was such a heavy downdraft, it was difficult. But anyway, yeah, we were the last passengers off, but the Navy diver was still on board.
That's Moss Hill speaking to us from Liverpool, one of the absolute heroes of the story of the Oceanus.